Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Wednesday afternoon. Thanks very much for tuning in. Frank Sennett will be along in the second half hour from Crane Chicago Business. Actually, Frank and then Louis Lazar from the Business Insider as well will be here, which is great to have them both out because it turns out there's been a lot of writing about airline travel, and Louis covers airline travel for the Business Insider, and so we'll talk to him about that. And turns out Frank's got a story about airfares as well. But we're going to start with the fact that Terry Savage broke the stock market. And
I broke it?
She's in the studio. You know, John Najarian, hello, Terry, how are you?
That's why they call them brokers, you know.
That's, I guess that might be it. Yeah, they break people's dreams.
Yes.
Well, John Najarian was on yesterday, and I had this conversation with him, and I think we talked off the air about it last week. You used to see the markets react to the day's news in some ways, you know, and I was kind of surprised when James Comey was fired. There wasn't a big reaction on Wall Street, and the VIX continued to be very low, and it seemed as if the day's news or the White House news wasn't having an impact. Well, that changed today.
Yeah, we've gotten dull. The Dow is down now 250 points. The Nasdaq, the Russell, they're all down. The Russell 2000 down about 2%, the Dow down about 1.25%, ditto for the S&P 500, Nasdaq down a little bit more. So the question is, can you give a logical reason for this? And just the big picture story, I think, is that after the election, the market soared on the belief, hope, optimism that there would be some kind of fiscal changes, tax cuts, investment spending, and so forth. That really set the market off on a tear after the election. When it became obvious this is going to be a little bit of same old, we had a very weak first quarter. But in the last three, four weeks, we've gotten some really good news on a lot of fronts, on housing, on consumer confidence, on manufacturing, on unemployment.
It was a good earnings season, right?
And that was the cherry on that frosting was the really some interesting earnings reports, even for example, everybody's given up retailing, and Target today came out with good earnings. So what's been carrying the market forward is the hope that the second quarter would be stronger, that earnings have come in the first quarter, and they would continue to grow for the second and third quarters. And none of the market had learned to shrug off the let's put it in quotes, craziness coming out of Washington. However, I think the changing point here is, and you can go back and wonder why the market didn't fall for a dozen other reasons that would have in the past triggered a sell-off. But this one, this memo that Comey allegedly put in his files, that comes under obstruction of justice. And that itself, if that's true, has the possibility of totally derailing anything Congress might do into some kind of further pursuit of this obstruction of justice
and
case.
I talked
and
to
that
you,
really hit the market.
Even John was saying yesterday, and we talked off the air about, there were people saying that they thought even that maybe some of the Trump troubles could lead to quicker action on the tax cuts and things like that.
Now
that changes.
Even the Republicans have got to, and you're seeing it. You saw some reports, I think, on Cranes from the Illinois delegation of some Republicans saying, wait, you know, we got to really investigate this. And that's what's made all the difference. There's another election coming up, hard to believe. And the Republican majority in Congress could be very vulnerable now. Now, on the market itself, so far in 2017, there have only been 3 days with a plus or minus increase of 1% in the S&P 500. Today will mark the fourth. And one of the big ones, I remember I was around, was on March 15th. That broke a 110-day streak of literally no
movement,
big change
in
the markets. You know, the longest streak since 1995. And a very interesting, at the time, I remember doing a report on, well, what does that mean? And there was an article, and I give credit to the Wall Street Journal, that pointed out that in the previous times, when after a 100-day streak without a drop, the market fell over 1%, a year later, the market had a gain of 13.5%.
Well, we'll take that, won't we?
So maybe this isn't the beginning of the end. But on the other hand, everybody's holding their breath saying, is 250 it? Or is this the beginning of something worse?
That's Terry Savage. You can read more from Terry at terrysavage.com. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio, personal finance expert, and you can read a lot about what we talk about at terrysavage.com. Now, a couple columns, one just up today, has to do with the stock market,
exactly.
Really, right?
Exactly. Timing. Either it was good timing to post a column or good timing for me to be thinking about this and writing it over the weekend.
It just shows your genius, Terry.
I have a little bit of a feel, but much better talking about it than trading it, I can guarantee you that.
But the idea is we've done well in the market, and maybe our balance has gotten a little out of whack when it comes to 401ks.
Exactly. A really interesting article from a guy who writes the Vanguard Investors newsletter, Weiner, and he said that there have been 204 all-time high closes since 2012. So if you sold at the highs, don't you love to brag about selling at the highs? You'd look back and you'd go, oh my gosh, why did I sell at the high? However, if you'd been in the stock market for since March of 29 at the lows and just put your money in that S&P 500, and you had said, I'll have a 60-40 conservative allocation, 60% in stocks, 40% in money markets or more conservative short-term bonds. Today, because of the market growth, you'd have an 80-20 allocation. So the question is, as I wrote this column, when do you prune back? How do you do it? You set up an allocation, and then do you do it once a year, twice a year? I featured a service called RebalanceIRA.com, and you can read the article at TerrySavage.com. But the whole idea is that you're not trying to be a market timer. You're just trying to stick to an asset allocation, especially since you're 8 years older. You made a lot of money. You might be trying to be more conservative. Instead, the market's made you exposed in a greater way.
How about that, though? You said something. Did you say rebalance twice a year? Every 3 years?
I said you might want to reset your allocation. What percent do I want in the stock market? Every 3 years, maybe. But maybe twice a year and not at year end when everybody's selling stocks and everything's distorted. Rebalance IRA does it for you in April and in November.
Well, you say to do it on a specific date so you're not swayed by emotion.
Exactly. It would be tough if today had been your day. Okay, this is it in May, and it came up, and oh my gosh, the market's down 250 points. But the point is to have a discipline and stick to it so you don't get overexposed. The alternative is eventually the market will rebalance for you. It'll just slide right back down, and then you'll probably panic because you're 8 years along the way closer to retirement. You're watching not your own money that you could have made, but money that you did make go down the drain. And when you feel you're in the middle, I mean, I've been there on live, you know, in the middle of these slides, it's the wrong time to sell. So this was a column I posted just to think about, okay, what's your exposure to stocks now? You're older, you're getting closer to retirement. Forget what the market thinks of Trump or what the market's doing today. Time to maybe sell off a little.
Okay, there's that one, and that pushes up another column that you wrote earlier this week about estate planning. And, I was telling Bennett Wakenight, the producer of the Wintrust Business Lunch Fund, young man, that I did everything contrary to your advice, so I'm not going to tell you.
Come on now. Don't tell me you did it yourself online with documents that you found on the Internet.
Okay, first of all, I did it online because it seemed like it was easy that way.
This is me shaking my head.
You
watch
print
this.
It
By
out
the time
and...
they figure out you made a mistake, my dear, you won't be around to fix it. I'm a real do-it-yourselfer. I believe in the Internet. You know that. But this is one area, estate planning. And by the way, this is not for rich old folks out there. This is for young couples, and it scares me to death that they have kids, they have life insurance, they've made no will. The state will decide whether that life insurance is going to be spent on summer camp or whether they can a guardian will be appointed. Can they go to a good university? You need an estate plan. A simple will is one thing. Better yet, a revocable living trust. It does exact same things as a will, except while you're alive, you put all your assets, you retitle your house, your investment accounts, maybe not your IRA, but your investment accounts in the name of the trust. And then you can buy and sell things, report capital gains on your own tax return. But if you're incapacitated, think a stroke or an accident or a coma, or if you die, the successor trustee you name, maybe it's your co-trustee, your spouse, your eldest child, has immediate power to deal with all the accounts.
So you don't have to wait for probate.
You don't have to wait for a lawyer. You don't have to go through court. Believe me, you want a revocable living trust. Think about these things and do not try to do this yourself.
Don't do this at home yourself.
Isn't
it kind of a drag if you have to rename and resave everything?
No. It's very easy. It's simple. It doesn't change your cost basis on anything. You know, you're not going to change your everyday checking account.
I did it online in 15 minutes, by the way.
And it'll cost
you, God forbid,
a lifetime of grief to make a will like that. You have children?
I do.
You have, and what happens? Did you make a will or a living trust?
We did both. We did it all.
Okay, here's a website.
For my funeral.
Attorneys, search-attorneys, S-E-A-R-C-H, estate-attorneys.com. That's the website of the Estate Planning Bar. You can search in Chicago geographically or in the suburbs, wherever you are, and find an estate planning specialist. Ask about the fees in advance. Figure out in advance, before you waste time in the lawyer's office, who gets what, who's going to be in charge, and then go in and make the documents professional.
One other thing that you advise, and this might be if you're planning on a funeral, which is really something I hadn't thought about. If you write down your funeral ideas, don't
put that in your will. They no read the will the day after the funeral.
Right. No one's going to open the will until it's too late.
Too late. And a health care power of attorney. And the living will, not to be confused with a revocable living trust, the living will, which says, you know, it's the end of my life, I don't do these kinds of things to prolong my life.
Check it out, terrysavage.com. Nice to see you. Go enjoy the weather.
Yeah, next week this time. Let's see what the market does this week.
It'll be up. It'll be way up in a week.
Okay, mark his words.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A little bit later in this half hour, we will talk to Louis Lazar, a columnist, a writer for the Chicago Business Journal. And, well, Louis, he's got several beats, tourism one thing, but also the airlines. And he's been following this American Airlines uniform story, so I'm sure we'll talk to him about that. But I want to start with Frank Sennett, who is at the Crane Chicago Business and joins us from, most Wednesdays, I guess. But he's got airlines on his mind as well. Frank Sennett, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, so it's a bargain to fly out of O'Hare these days, I guess.
Yeah, it's crazy. The average domestic fare paid by passengers flying out of O'Hare dropped 14% between 2009 and 2016, and that's where other major airports are seeing, you know, lesser declines or even increases. So because of some competition at O'Hare, we're sitting pretty.
That's a pretty amazing thing. So if you look at it over those years, a 13% drop, I think, or 14%, the nation's average was a 13% increase. So we're, I guess, about 27% better than we might have been at O'Hare. And this is all because of competition?
Yeah. So what the research suggests is that even though we have a duopoly mainly at O'Hare with American and United, even small competitors help drive the prices down. So when you see upstarts like JetBlue, like Virgin, which is now part of Alaska, when you see Spirit Airlines, you know, combined, they may only have a few percentage points, but when they really drop the fares down, the big guys match the rates often. And with the new gates that we're looking at seeing added at O'Hare, that trend could continue.
All right. So Spirit Airlines has, I think, 4% of the market share of passengers, United 44%, American 36%, but just that 4%. Is having an impact. And I mean, I would imagine that United and American are sort of going at each other as well from O'Hare.
Yeah, I mean, without that competition, it's like the gas stations across the street from each other. They're, you know, unlikely to get into a huge price war. Certainly United and American is better than just having one airline in terms of prices for consumers. But really, the studies are showing that it's more gates for these upstart airlines that are kind of driving things down.
And the drops aren't altogether everywhere. I mean, the story's got some statistics. If you fly Chicago to Los Angeles, the prices have fallen 17%, to Vegas down 23%. But if you're flying to St. Louis, the prices during the time period we're talking about up 58%. Cleveland, 48%, which really doesn't apply because who would want to go there? And Nashville, up 35%.
I was going to say, from a baseball fan perspective in Chicago, if you're flying to either St. Louis or Cleveland, just get a one-way ticket.
Right.
We'll be happy with that.
Right, you deserve what you get. And here's my favorite. Average fares out of Pittsburgh, so this is the place where the prices have increased perhaps the most over this time period, up 20%. So, you know, we're always ripping on O'Hare, but this is good news. And you made reference as well to the future, because the city's renegotiating, right, with the two big airlines, and it looks like there are more gates coming.
Yeah, so basically, you know, we had this plan a while back for a Western terminal, and that was really the United and American work to put the kibosh on that. So we're not going to get a ton of new gates, but there is, you know, a renovation coming that's going to add a handful of new gates, and those are going to hopefully go folks who are, you know, looking to travel cheaply, hopefully will go to some of those upstarts. And that'll be happening over the next few years. They're going to add 9 new gates by 2019.
And one other thing, I want to get to the gates, but the piece also points out that the big traffic from Southwest, I think they're up 30% out of Midway, having an impact on the prices as well at O'Hare. And Midway's just did a revamp of the restaurants and things. I have not flown out of Midway in a long, long time. Have you?
I have. I've recently flown in and out of Midway. Used them to when I took my trip down to Atlanta recently, and it was pleasant, not a problem. I've encountered huge security lines there in the past,
right,
but had no issues this last time around. I think that the TSA's beefed up the security gates at both O'Hare and Midway. So other than that, I've never really had an issue with Midway, other than, have just really, if you're not going to fly on Southwest, there's not a whole lot of
not to let you. Okay, I got a joke for you, okay?
Mm-hmm.
John McCain and Jan Schakowsky walk into a bar, and they come out with...
What they come out with is a potential solution to some of the price gouging and prescription drug prices.
Now, Jan Schakowsky and McCain, solution. I don't think Schakowsky and McCain agree on very many things.
No, so you've got a very liberal Democrat from Illinois, and you've got the Republican from Arizona, John McCain, who's known to be somewhat of a maverick. He's conservative on a lot of issues, but he's flexible. He's working with Schakowsky on legislation that would require drug makers to give warning of some price increases, and even better, to explain why they're raising these prices. Is it just to gouge people who would otherwise, you know, be sicker or die without the pills, or are there actual cost increases in the production and the marketing that are driving these increases? So it's looking to put a little more transparency in. It's called the Fair Accountability and Innovative Research Drug Pricing Act of 2017. And I'd like you to say that 10 times fast, Steve, and then you'll have your hour will be over.
Oh, that's something to look forward to next week. I'll practice all week on that, Frank. Okay, so the idea is that the drug companies could still raise their prices, but they might be a little intimidated or inhibited if they know they've got to notify people and sort of explain the price as they do it. Is that kind of the point of it all?
Yeah, so the law would require any drug makers to give the feds at least a 30-day notice before raising prices on drugs that cost at least $100 a month if they raise those prices by more than 10% a year or 25% over 3 years. So these kind of spiking drug prices that we've seen that have generated some headlines, this is meant to capture those, these high-priced drugs that then the maker will just really jack the price up. They say, let's shine a spotlight on these guys, and if they can't justify it, perhaps the feds or the court of public opinion will get them to back off.
And so we mentioned Schakowsky and McCain in the world of elected officials, but you've got disparate groups like ARP, the AFL-CIO, the Multiple Sclerosis Society, all signing on to this, so it looks as if there could be some support for action on it.
Absolutely, and the drug industry is expected, some of the lobbyists are expected to oppose it potentially, but this one could be one of those reforms that has wide appeal.
Drug lobbyists got some biceps, they're pretty strong.
That's right.
Frank Sennett from Crane Chicago Business. You can read more about these and other stories at chicagobusiness.com. Nice to talk to you, friend.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, we'll check in again next week. It's 12:52. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Steve Bertrand here. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate that. Louis Lazar is in the studio. He writes for the Chicago Business Journal. Louis, I said the Business Insider for some reason earlier today. I don't know. Did you think about renaming it?
No. It will stay the Business Journal,
well,
to the best of my knowledge.
Welcome back. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
I want to talk, I was mentioning earlier, it's kind of airline focused today, but before we do that, I want to go to England and this McDonald's advertisement, the Dead Dad commercial. Now, posted on your page was a 90-second version. Is right. The 90-second version the one running on TV there, or is that just...
I believe so, but it's quite possible there could be a 60-second version as well. I don't know exactly
situation. So the premise of it is it's a young boy whose father has been dead for a few years, it seems like. He's talking to his mom, and he starts asking questions of his mom about his dad. And as they do, she's revealing more and more, and they find themselves at a McDonald's.
Mom.
Yes, love?
What was Dad like?
He was big and cuddly, your dad. Tall as a house. Big, big hands. Come on, little one. He was never scruffy.
And it goes on like that, and they make their way to a McDonald's. He orders a fillet of fish, and, everyone just feels great.
Right.
Why are we apologizing about this?
I don't know. I mean, you have to get in the mindset of America and Britain, for that matter, as to why people get upset about them. Because I thought it was very beautifully written, very beautifully performed. And it really, as I said in my article, seamlessly integrated the McDonald's brand with a real situation that I think many people right. have when they've had a loved one that's passed. I know my own mother passed away a year ago, and I find myself in situations like this.
Well, and it did what McDonald's used to do, or I think what it wants to portray, that when you that it's part of your life. McDonald's is part of your life.
And they've really gotten away from that for the last 10 years or so. They've been running after this millennial crowd, which is, you know, all the jumping and jiving and stuff like that. But this really takes them back to a place where it shows the McDonald's brand has some meaning.
So where did the complaining come from?
Well, it came from some people in Britain primarily, I gather.
But what was the complaint?
They felt it was an offensive to connect McDonald's to something to have to do with the deceased person. it made no sense to me, which is why I felt compelled to write the article. I mean, you know, it's just people who like to complain, I think, and will grab at anything.
Okay, so we've got those people, and then we've got corporate people who might be too quick to apologize.
And everybody's so sensitive now. I mean, in the wake of the United fiasco, where after his first miscue, Oscar Munoz couldn't rush fast enough right. to apologize and keep apologizing. So that's the mode in corporate America and Britain, too, now, is to apologize if there's the slightest
So they problem. Apologized. Did they pull the ad?
Yes.
Oh, that's too
Late
bad.
Yesterday they did.
Too bad. Okay, so there is that. You can read more about that from Lewis. You're the guy, you've been writing about this American Airlines uniform fiasco since last September. And, you know, you and I have been talking about it. At first, I kind of thought it was a little silly. And
a lot of other people did. You weren't alone in that. They kept writing me, well, why are you writing about this? And I said, it really is an insight into how you deal with the problem in a major company, a corporation.
And so your latest story has to do with the pilot who goes before the town hall. I think it was the CEO there.
The president.
And he says that I am now in an unsafe work environment because he has headaches, rashes while he's flying the planes because of these uniforms.
Exactly. And I think that if the top management at American Airlines didn't hear enough alarms before this, I think this statement from the pilot, a major pilot at the airline, certainly got their attention.
Okay, so maybe I'm a little ahead of myself, but United or American contracted out for these new uniforms. The flight attendants and others started wearing them and said, yeah, we get itchy, we get rashes, that something needs to be done.
And severe respiratory. I mean, there were a whole range of really rather significant health problems.
And it's all real.
Yeah, no, this is, I mean, if a lot of people thought, oh, this is just a lot of people, again, making up something to
right.
be making it up. But the more and more cases that were documented, this is not a joke.
And so this pilot speaks, says it's an unsafe work. I don't want my pilot to be, you know, having respiratory problems and headaches.
Yeah, and it happened very suddenly.
Is this finally going to move the bar on this?
Well, I mean, ISM, in responding to what the pilot said late last week, clearly suggested they're thinking more seriously about bringing in a new manufacturer, new fabrics, new everything. So I think the end game at this point pretty clearly points to the recall of the old uniforms and something new. I don't know whether it'll be a week or 2 weeks or 2 months from now.
Okay, so we all complain about the airlines. There's the United thing, and I'm sure you wrote a lot about that, this thing. But it looks like the traffic is up higher and higher, right?
That is a strange twist in all of this. I mean, the more people complain about the airlines, the more they seem to jump on and want to fly somewhere.
Right.
So, yes, traffic was up at United after this major fiasco in early April. So I don't think anybody can reconcile it except that people have short memories.
Lewis, or that people will fly whatever's more convenient and cheaper.
Right. Well,
I mean, that's just the way
they're
going to chew their airline.
But clearly, you know, as I tell people and write constantly, you have to be prepared for anything to happen when you go near an airport or get on an airplane in this day and age. That is a simple reality.
Lewis Lazar writes for the Chicago Business Journal. Read more at bizjournals.com. Thanks for coming by. We got to do it more often.
Let's do it.
You never return my calls.